Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to New Eridu. Today is Saturday, February 5th, 2011, and this is your host, the voice of New Eridu. Thousands of years ago in human history, the city of Eridu was built in what is now southern Iraq. It was built by a civilization known as the Anunnaki, whose advanced technologies and civilization conceived, gave birth to, and nurtured humankind under the leadership of the Anunnaki commander of Earth, known as Enki, or Ea. Had Enki prevailed in Anunnaki politics, and had his plan for his human children been fulfilled, humankind might already have taken its place among the civilized races. The seed that Enki planted, deep within human DNA, has awakened. The sovereign, God-conscious human spirit, that miraculous gift of Source, has begun to assert its sovereign right to stand as equals among the peoples of conscience. Now begins the new paradigm, one based on truth and sovereign responsibility. Welcome, humankind. New Eridu has been waiting for you.
Sovereigns, and thank you for spending your Saturday evening in New Eridu, and of course a special thank you to the Archives listeners. This has been a very interesting week weather-wise. I mean, global warming? What global warming? We had snow here in Texas. It was still on the ground a day later, and I don't think in my entire lifetime that I have ever seen that happen. I could be wrong. It may have happened and I wasn't paying attention, but I don't remember it ever doing that. And that wasn't a whole lot of snow. It was just like a half an inch. But of course, half an inch in Texas with people who don't know how to drive on snow, it pretty much shuts everything down, which is kind of good because it's quiet. But on the other hand, I also was hearing a report from a person who was saying that somebody had seen snow that was contaminated with some purple substance. And what was happening was it was precipitating out of the snow crystals, so that, you know, when a snow crystal was on a surface that was at an angle instead of lying flat, that there was a purplish substance gathering at the bottom of the crystal because the crystal had partially melted and it came out of solution. That's pretty weird. Now, I didn't see any of that where I live, but it's definitely something to consider is what possibly was sprayed in the air that precipitated out in that snow. Is that our chemtrail stuff or what? So it was I was supposed to be purple, Javonda. It wasn't supposed to be yellow. I'm replying to the chat room here. but, you know, we think about our climate and we make predictions on it as if we really knew what the real climate is supposed to be. Because really, we've only been keeping records for about 150 years. Now, those records, the scientific nature of those records didn't really come along until about 1900. So we've got just a little over 100 years of record keeping, really, that we could rely on. And it's widespread enough record keeping also. Because, you know, just because somebody's keeping records in Europe doesn't mean they know what's going on in the Americas. So there's some, you know, records that were kept over there for a lot longer than that. But again, they weren't scientific and so on and so forth. But we prognosticate our weather as if it was something that we, you know, really knew. We assume stability. And I don't think when you can have a geological record that includes a woolly mammoth frozen with flowers still in his mouth, that we can say that weather's predictable on this planet, or that things can be, you know, plotted out on a graph as if they were a mathematical formula. I don't think that's even possible. We do have a variable star. The sun is a variable star, and that has been admitted by NASA finally after I had poked and prodded at them in my blog. I don't know that those two things were related, but I found it highly interesting that I poked and prodded on it, and 2 weeks later NASA announced it. So, anyway, it's just kind of one of those funny timing things. And you know something? We're going to talk about what I just did there. You know what that was? That was ego. That was me gloating over being something that might have influence NASA to announce something. Of course, that's ridiculous. But that's what the ego does. That's where the ego lives. And that's what this show is going to be about. When to notice when we're slipping into egoic behaviors. Well, the whole world is one big egoic behavior. And we'll start, of course, with the wave of unrest that's going around this planet. I came across, there was some discussion about how much unrest really is in the world. And I came across a website, and I'm going to put the link up here in the chat room, assuming I can control my browsers well enough to do so. It is globalsecurity.org, and it lists all of the countries that have ongoing conflict. And there are a bunch of them on here. Algeria has an insurgency that's been going on since 1992. Angola is having some kind of ongoing conflict. Burma has an insurgency since 1950. That's kind of pretty old. China has got stuff going on all over with the Senkaku Islands, Spratly Islands, something I can't pronounce. Colombia has insurgencies. Congo, which is also known as Zaire, has a war that's been going on since 1998. Soviet Georgia has got a civil war. That heated up last year. Got kind of nasty. India's got three conflicts, Assam, Kashmir, and something called the Naxalite uprising. All of these are ongoing, and the oldest one dates back to 1967. Israel has an ongoing conflict with Palestine. The date they have on here is 1967, but I believe it actually predates that. It just wasn't officially a war at that time. Ivory Coast has a civil war that's been going on since 2002. Korean War is still listed as not closed. And that dates back to 1953. Of course, that's the United States was involved in that. Kyrgyzstan, civil unrest. That's recent. Laos has got an insurgency that's been going on since 2000. Mexico has a drug war going on. And let me tell you, that drug war is getting nasty. People here in Texas are getting really, really, really nervous over that one because it's coming across the border. You know, there was a big thing in the news about how Mexico sold us 280 megawatts of power when Texas had a power problem this week. You know what that power problem was? That power problem was that the Bubbas didn't put insulation on the cooling pipes that go to the power plant, and they froze. That was all that was. That was failure in basic maintenance. But they made a big deal out of how Mexico sold us all this power. And you know what? Mexico actually didn't do that. Mexico said they were going to. They may have delivered part of it, but they also backed out of it immediately. So the news played that one. And yet they expect us to come down there and help them with the drug war. I don't know. That whole thing is a mess. Has got some kind of a thing going on. Nepal has got something going on. Nigeria, civil disturbance. Pakistan has got a bunch of stuff going on. Palestine, Peru's got an insurgency going on. Philippines has an uprising that's been going on since the 70s. Russia has got an insurgency, not North Caucasus, and I'm guessing that one has to do with I'm not absolutely certain. Somalia has a civil war. Spain has an uprising that's been ongoing since the 1970s. That's the Basque separatists. Thailand has Islamic problems. Thailand, by the way, is also now, as of today, in skirmishes with Cambodia. So I don't know what that's all about yet. Turkey has got Kurdistan. We've got, in the United States, have Afghanistan and Iraq. But this surprised me. Let me tell you, this one really surprised me. We also have listed on this two other operations, one of which I didn't know about. It's listing a military exercise, which is probably posturing against China, which is ongoing in the Philippines. It takes the form of being military exercises, but it's one of those things as kind of drawing a line in the sand with China. So that one I knew about. But did you know that we have one listed in a country called Djibouti? Do you know where Djibouti is? It's right there in that little notch. When you look at the Arabian Peninsula there, and you know where Yemen is. And then if you look at the main body of Africa, there's this little notch. And that's right near where that Stargate is, and that's where all of those earthquakes have been going on. Did you know we have an ongoing military operation in that area? That one just surprised the heck out of me. It's been going on since 2001. That is interesting. My eyes are going to be on that area really hard now. Because nobody, you don't hear anything about that in the news. Ever. And Uzbekistan has got civil disturbances. And Yemen also has some kind of a internal struggle. So, I mean, that's a lot of strife. And some of this is some really old strife, which tells me we're not settling our conflicts. We are not settling these conflicts at all. And that is just, to me, that's scary. Why can't we settle our conflicts? Anyway, there's the link in the chat room. And feel free to check that out for yourself. It's a kind of an interesting site. Little personal note. I got a call last weekend from my son, who is in the United States Air Force. And I'm not really going to tell you very much about what he does because that's kind of confidential. But it is a sensitive job that he does. And he is a very highly trained specialist. He was told he had 4 days to go TDY, and that TDY would last anywhere between 6 months and a year minimum. You don't get 4 days to go TDY for that long. So something hit the fan last weekend. And I don't know if it has to do with Egypt or anything. He also was not told where he was going. And I have not heard from him since, so I don't know anything about what happened with him. But that's pretty eerie. Just FYI. That's one of those things that when you're a mother, you just have to take the deep breaths and trust in things and keep going. Anyway, unrest around the globe. Egypt. They just had a big changeover in their government. That was just announced. I was looking at CNN earlier that a bunch of their government has stepped down. And this is not related to the resignations of the cabinet. This has nothing to do with that. This has entirely to do with the government losing confidence in the leadership and not wanting to get caught up in the mess and standing up and saying, you're not doing this in my name. Now, I'd like to read a little bit of something here that I came across. This is also from CNN. Lately, CNN, being mainstream, seems to be putting out some kind of interesting information. I don't really, anytime you see information wars like this, you know that what you're actually watching is the posturing of the powers that pretend. So apparently whoever controls CNN is taking a more aggressive stance against somebody else that's playing this game. And don't ask me who it is because I don't know. And I honestly don't care because they're all the same to me. You know, they look at us as being all the same. Well, they look all the same to me. You know, if you're one of the powers that pretend, you're a problem. And everybody's the same problem if you're in that category. Anyway, this article is really quite interesting. It's called Why Egypt Erupted, and it's written by Kelly Arena. And I'm going to read this whole article to you because it's very, very insightful. Stunned by the events in Egypt? I'm not. Anyone who has spent any time in the past few years could see this coming. Egyptian youth have been in a state of paralysis. They can't find jobs, can't afford to get married, and have little hope for real change. Anyone under 30 has lived under emergency law their entire life. In plain English, it means more powers for the police, fewer constitutional rights, and a whole lot of censorship. thousands of people have been detained, and there are an untold number of political prisoners. I have been working with youth, civil society, and political organizations in Egypt over the past year. The frustrations they felt was palpable, but this past fall, the dynamic changed. For the first time, many of them were going to vote. They had braved going to the police stations for voter cards, many bringing their parents with them in case they were harassed or detained. They had organized Facebook campaigns to rally Egyptian youth to get involved in the political process. A quota had been passed to seat more women in parliament. There was talk of a better future. It seems the Egyptian government sensed it too. A friend of mine who was also working with youth groups was detained in October as he arrived in Cairo. A consultant for Emerson Human Capital, Mark Webster has worked in Egypt for years without incident. Webster had been doing communication work with the youth groups using tools such as Facebook and YouTube. But with the November election approaching, he was detained for 15 hours at the Cairo airport. His request to call the U.S. Embassy was denied. He was asked if he knew Hillary Clinton and if Human Capital had anything to do with human rights. As Webster put it, this certainly was odd behavior for an American ally in the region, but not odd behavior for a dictatorship. November came. The Egyptian government did not allow outside monitors to observe the elections. There were reports of rampant fraud and abuse. Some young people I had worked with sent me messages complaining that polling places had been closed early. Some were not even let in to vote. Many female candidates were not given party support or funding. It was a devastating blow to those young Egyptians who had worked so hard to try to initiate change. It was hard to be encouraging, that is, until we saw what happened in Tunisia. I got a message the night before the protests from a young woman I had trained in Cairo. She wanted me to know that thousands of youth were going to demonstrate to fight corruption. She warned that police violence was expected and wanted me to spread the news to support her in her fight for freedom. The news spread like wildfire over the huge social networks those groups had built over the years. Thousands marched, but their only plan was to unseat President Hosni Mubarak. It didn't take long for other voices to co-opt their message. Mubarak took his time responding, letting protest fatigue set in. Lines of communication wound. Barak did not step down. My heart broke when I saw the violence erupt in the streets. The young people who are in touch with me say many of those pro-Mubarak supporters were paid thugs, some flashing Department of the Interior badges. Others report that Egyptian state television is broadcasting that Israeli agents and the media are behind the demonstrations in Tahrir Square. Journalists were hunted as they continued to shine a light on what is going on there. It is not an exaggeration to suggest that the future of a whole generation is riding on the outcome of this showdown. Stunned by the news out of Egypt? I'm not. That was Kelly Arena for CNN. I think everybody saw Anderson and his news crew getting attacked. Now, whether or not that was a staged thing, cause, I mean, let's face it, they kind of attacked, didn't they, some of the people that have been injured in these protests. So, you know, I don't want to call shenanigans on this necessarily. But there have been other groups that were targeted, certainly. Other journalists that were targeted, and civil rights workers and, you know, public health workers and stuff that have been, you know, little people. People you would not know. They don't have any social capital over here that are reporting that they're getting attacked as well. Simply because the government over there seems to think that they know the wrong people or something, or they just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So that's just an interesting perspective on what's going on over there. And the important thing is to realize that this stuff is being engineered. You can see the social engineering. It is so badly done. You can see it happening. She called it exactly, letting protest fatigue set in. She absolutely exactly. They're running out of food over there. And I'll be willing to bet you that one of the big reasons why they're running out of food over there is because the government has done something to make sure the food shipments don't go through. The people that were evacuating, the last of the Americans that were evacuating over there, were reporting that you couldn't get anything because all of the supply lines had dried up. And I don't think that's really true. Some people have said, well, that's because everybody's out protesting. I don't think that's true, because in any society, they are going to find some way to maintain basic lines of support. People know that when their jobs are critical to other people, and they will take care of them. They'll fulfill them, no matter how much is going on. The social engineering, though, is showing because it's being done so poorly. We are getting an object lesson in how that sort of thing is done with crowds, and we can learn from that and not fall into the same traps that have been set over there for the people who are trying to implement change. I'm going to sidetrack this for a second. Last year, I took part in a demonstration here in Texas, where a group of us had gotten together and we went down to the state capitol and personally delivered to each and every legislator a document called the Articles of Freedom. And what that is was a draft of the declarations of the first Continental Congress we've had since the original one. It was a people's congress. It wasn't a political thing. And we wanted to make sure that each one of these people had this in their hand. And the call went out, and I made a big deal out of it. I said, look, they're going to try to make us look bad. What if they decide to start pulling some kind of a false flag thing? We're going to need to be able to prove that that's what it is. So the call went out for everybody to bring cameras. And let me tell you, there were about 300 people there, and everybody had a camera. There was no way on earth they were going to be able to pull anything. And I was watching all the weird-looking people walking in and out of that building, and some of them had the vibe of being something other than a state employee. And they were not happy. They were really not happy. But you know something? They packed their bags and they went home, and nothing happened. And you know something? I don't care who loses their credibility or gets egg on their face because they say, I'm sure something's going to happen, then it doesn't happen. I don't care. I think that's a badge of honor. Charles had mentioned it. The fellow that was interviewed by Bill Ryan on Project Avalon that I did a program on a couple of shows ago, Powers That Pretend, he's their henchman somehow. He had said that they rejoiced every time someone made a prediction and the prediction didn't, and they made sure that the prediction would not come true, because they knew they had taken out another one of us, another one of our voices. And you know something? First of all, I don't believe that for a second. I don't think that they care about us on the individual level. I think what they care about is larger scale things. That's when they start to get nervous. And right now they're getting pretty nervous because there is civil unrest in so many countries. And every one of them is revolting against some kind of corrupt government. And the corrupt government is how they survive. And that's what's making them nervous right now. That and the fact that they're not able to collapse the economies as fast as they thought they were going to, that's scaring them too. And so they're trying to pull other stuff. And it's going to keep escalating. And you know something? All we have to do is hang tough. And they'll start blaming each other. Because they're going to try to get us to where we're blaming each other and we're calling each other names and so on and so forth. If you are a person that can be seen in the world, if you are not in high political office, high business office, you're probably not to blame because you don't have enough of the picture to be to blame. So just let's just get together on this and put the ideas of war and stuff aside for a while. Seriously, we've got to do that. We've got enough stuff on our hands without that, enough drama coming. As I mentioned earlier, the sun is a variable star. And I've been watching it now for about 4 years. And it's hiccuping regularly now, and with pretty good force. The north pole of the sun has faded. It is almost gone. And it kind of took a little bit, and then it fades out again. The last time it faded out, it almost disappeared. There were like, the way they describe it from their magnetic data, we're talking about NASA and International Space Weather Association. They draw a little picture of the sun and they put field lines on it like you see in a science textbook. And each one of those field lines represents lines of charge. And the number of lines of charge indicate the field density and strength, as well as, in some cases, the polarity of it. At the weakest point, the sun was down to, it had like 27 field lines on its south pole and 7 on its north pole. And the magnetic field was just obviously broken. And it sort of regrouped a little more out of it, but it's still... It comes back weaker each time it has to regroup. So, you know, I don't want to take bets on how long it's going to be till that magnetic field reverses. And, of course, because the Earth is coupled to the sun magnetically, that means that it's only a matter of time that we have a magnetic field reversal on the Earth, too. And the planet is not going to flip over, folks. It's not. It's just not. Okay? Because, I mean, look at this, the evidence. It shows, the geological record shows that the alignment of the pole has shifted. But it also shows that the Earth's general position to the other bodies has not. And that means that, you know, this end up has applied since pretty much the point at which we can start measuring things. If you look at the pyramids in Giza, they are aligned according to Orion, which means they could see Orion from where they were, which means it was about in the same orientation. You know, there was a smooth calculation of drift because there is some precession in the entire solar system, but it wasn't dramatic. And if the planet was oscillating that much, if those pole shifts were coming like that, you'd think you'd see some perturbation in that, which doesn't exist. And there's even older monuments that are tied to star positions that say it hasn't changed. So we're not flipping over. That doesn't mean we're home free. We do have a lot of electrical and electromagnetic interference that's coming in. And, in fact, over the last couple of days, we had G2 magnetic storms, which is kind of nice. not big enough to cause any real trouble yet, but puts on a big light show. And they're expecting possibility of another one tonight. There were again announcements made in the media this week, warning people how much disruption they face in case of a giant geomagnetic storm. Well, you know, I find it really interesting that they pre-announce all this stuff, because anytime they pre-announce something like that, and it's something that the average person doesn't really have any control over it, it makes me wonder why they're doing it. Is there some social engineering reason for it that they're doing that? What are they planning to do? Planning to take down the global electrical grid to throw us in chaos, perhaps? I don't know. But I'm going to keep an eye on that one, too, and let you know if I see anything more coming down that way. But the more interesting thing that came through the news this week was that the Earth has tilted and is tilting more quickly. Of course, how in wintertime the sun sets in the northernmost part of the northern hemisphere, and they get completely dark. It's like in the summer they're completely light, and all day long and all night long they have the sun up a little bit. And in the wintertime, they go completely dark. It's like it's nighttime the whole time. The sun never rises. And then there's a day. It's predictable from year to year which day there's going to be the first sunrise for that year. And the sunrise this year came 2 days early, which means that the planet is tipping, getting pulled. The magnetic pole has been pulled off center, but this isn't the magnetic pole. This is the whole entire planet itself is tipping. Remember what I just said, we're not going to flip over? That doesn't mean we're not going to rock and roll. We're going to rock and roll. And it's going to be interesting. But it's slow. It's slow. I think the climate might notice it. 2 days of warming in a year to the north. I don't know. We'll see. One can assume that it's 2 days early. It will also be 2 days early to set. So who knows? I don't know. But it's something that's definitely to watch. What I think it actually is, though, is it's sort of like it's twisted. Because let me tell you what I ran into. I downloaded an application. I got a new smartphone the other day because my old phone was dying. And I downloaded an application called Google Sky. And you can take Google Sky outside and you can hold it up above you. And it tracks around to see, what the stars are. Basically, if you hold it up there, it should show you the constellation that's right behind it. So you can identify all of the different stars. And I took it out and I was playing with it. And at first I thought, well, maybe it's just because it's getting an echo off of Bing or something and the location is off a little bit, because it's supposed to be accurate within 90 meters. 90 meters is nothing when you're looking at astronomical objects. It should be dead on accurate. And what I was noticing was that the constellations were there, but they were tilted about 30 degrees. It was a rotation to it that shouldn't be there. And it was consistent everywhere I looked. And different I took the same experiment in different locations. And it was the same. So we have tilted, as a planetary body, we have tilted a little bit so that we're not looking at the same exact piece of sky that we were a few years ago. I don't know how to describe that really well. I don't have terminology for it. But, yeah, it's a really, really cool application. And even though it is off a little bit right now, you can still tell what's lining up. You can still figure it out. I'm gonna pronounce his name wrong. Yachita put up in the chat room the link to Google Sky, and that's google.com/sky. That one is that's the web-based application, and there's a mobile application if you have a smartphone, like an Android. You can run it on that. But anyway, I just thought that would be kind of interesting to pass on as well. So we've got a lot of stuff coming down the pike at us. But I'll tell you, what I've been seeing lately, near to home, is the cumulative stress is coming out. And this is part of this is due to the truth waves. There's been a lot of people that have been committing murder-suicide, more than average, I swear it is. At least it's in the news more. And they're worse. The stress is getting to people. It's getting to people bad. And part of it, though, I think, is because we're having to redefine our relationships with one another. Truth, when it enters into a relationship that is based on falsehood, is going to disrupt that relationship. It's going to require that relationship be put on different grounds. And some people are not able to deal with this. That's going to be a large challenge that we're going to be facing over the next few. It's a big one. And you look across this whole panoply of what's going on in the world and what's going on in our communities and what's going on in our families and our personal relationships. The thing that I see, the pattern that I see emerging from all of those places is ego. This truth wave is working directly on ego, and particularly on its manifestations that require illusion or deception. For example, a lot of these countries were perfectly happy to go along and say, you know, okay, we have a dictator in power. You know what? It's not really impinging on my life. I'm going to go about my business and live my life and whatever. China did that for ages and ages and ages. They had a feudal system there that lasted longer, I think, than just about anywhere else. And it became part of the culture. And that's why the Chinese curse, may you live in exciting times, came about. It's because the times would be political unrest. And people did everything they could to avoid it. The average person on the street did everything they could to avoid getting entangled in that. And that's probably still true to a great extent, but, you know, not as much as it used to be. It seems like there's more people that are becoming activists. And some of them are going a little too far and becoming militant. But that's a change. And that's, like I said, part of that's from the truth wave. Part of that is also because of improved communications. We are now able to talk to people and compare our situation to other people's situation and go, hey, it's not as nice here as you have it. I want to change where I live to be more like where you live. I want to have the same opportunities that you have. And people can exchange strategies in how to do that. It's much easier nowadays. And that's why maintaining the internet and maintaining the ability to communicate with one another online, as we are doing right now, is so important. We've got to keep these lines of communication up. Anybody who wants to sever it, I guarantee you, they do not have your best interests in mind, and they need to be opposed with any amount of force necessary. And I hope it never comes to that, but we've got to keep the lines of communication open. Now, there are plenty of initiatives now that I had joined one, and there's been three more that's come to my attention, of groups that are trying to find ways to build, quote-unquote, an underground internet, a peer-to-peer networking version of the internet, and that's what we really need. We need something that we can't have somebody just walk in and throw a switch and throw the whole thing offline. That won't do. No one should have that kind of power, ever. It's a basic fundamental human right to be able to communicate. Well, anyway, also nearer to home. Last week I had a fellow that appeared in my chat room, and he also reappeared, I believe, on the Healing Fountains chat room, came in here and just disrupted the heck out of my particular show and started to do the same thing on the Healing Fountain show. And he was posturing and putting up nasty words and gloating, and he was feeding his ego. He was stoking that ego. He was getting high off of what he was doing. The endorphins were going insane. Well, a little bit later this week, in another group that I'm a member of, there was another incident with someone who was gloating over having power over someone else and getting high off of and getting an endorphin rush from basically putting someone else down. And this one went a step further. Instead of just being a giggling little kid, you know, smearing his poo on the wall, this one was actually cloaking it in the appearance of being righteous. And it was stomach-turning to watch. I'm not going to name names. There are several people in chat room who don't know who I'm talking about, though. That person has a lesson coming, a big one. And we're going to have to let him learn it. But whenever you see someone who has got that high going, you know the ego is pumping. You know the ego is sitting in the driver's seat and gloating, because that's one of the signs of ego is that gloating thing. What I pointed out earlier when I was talking about saying something about the sun being a variable star, and then 2 weeks later NASA announcing it. That's a gloat. It's a subtle gloat, but it's a gloat. And we all do it. Every single one of us does this. We need to become aware of that. Another thing that I've noticed that's associated with ego, and I would go so far as to call it its handmaiden, its partner in crime, is militant language. I mean, that can be anything from, we had a big deal the other day over some hunting metaphors being used in political circles. Target individuals, and Sarah Palin, supposedly her website, had targets drawn over the districts, including the congresswoman's that got shot. And they were saying, well, that's egging people on to go shoot. No, it's not. But it may not be the best metaphor anymore. Maybe an obsolete metaphor. In fact, I'm counting light being an obsolete metaphor. Militant language. Sword of light is militant, guys. It's militant. It's a sword. Jesus said he came to bring a sword. You look in the Bible. Militant language, and it is ego. And it is something that they use to control us. It gets us stirred up, gets our hearts pumping, gets our endorphins going. And it gets us to where we're not thinking straight. When those endorphins kick in, you're not thinking straight. When the ego it brings up that kind of reaction in you, your logic and your dispassionate I goes away to an extent. Your capacity is diminished as surely as if you drank a beer. You can't drive a car if you drink a beer. I know some people will say they can, but you shouldn't. But the point is, when you have high emotions, your cognitive functions diminish. And the control system uses this against us. And it's up amongst each other and within ourselves. And that little rush, when you get that little realize, I said that go, and that your capacity to think straight has gone down. Take a step back, take the deep breath, diminish it, and then act. If that means you have to stand up and walk out of the room, if that means you have to step off out of a chat that you're in online, if that means you have to tell somebody on the phone, I will call you back, do that. Come back cold. Come back logical and in balance. Come back remembering love. Remembering that you are dealing with someone who is part of Source, the same as you. I'm going to play a little song here and rest my voice a little bit. And then we're going to come back and we'll talk a little bit more about ego. And I have some Eckhart Tolle for you. This is Globus Europa. That was pretty stirring. I listened to that one, and you know, it's almost a patriotic action that it tends to elicit, doesn't it? That's kind of the whole point of the major key, I believe. Anyway, a little bit earlier about the way that the human ego can manifest, and I think no one ever has given a diagnostic of how to know your ego than Eckhart Tolle did in this next piece that I'm going to play in a second here. But I want you to keep a couple of things in the back of your mind. The first one of those things is that, of course, that it is something that the control system uses against us. And the second thing that I would like you to remember is that the Anunnaki are a large source of that ego behavior. Not that the humans didn't have behavior before the Anunnaki came along. Rather, that the Anunnaki, through the controls, introduced exaggerations in what a NAV system, the ego is a system, okay? Everybody has it. It's what makes you able to survive. It's a necessary part of who you are. It's not an evil thing. The problem is it's in the wrong place. And the Anunnaki played a part in making sure that it was in the wrong place, specifically to make us vulnerable to the control system. So here is Eckhart Tolle giving a little bit of a diagnostic on how to know your ego.
The ego's need to feel superior. There are many subtle but easily overlooked forms of ego that you may observe in other people and, more important, in yourself. Remember, the moment you become aware of the ego in yourself, that emerging awareness is who you are beyond ego, the deeper I. The recognition of the false is already the arising of the real. For example, you are about to tell someone the news of what happened. Guess what? You don't know yet? Let me tell you. If you're alert enough, present enough, you may be able to detect a momentary sense of satisfaction within yourself just before imparting the news, even if it is bad news. It is due to the fact that for a brief moment there is, in the eyes of the ego, an imbalance in your favor between you and the other person. For that brief moment, you know more than the other. The satisfaction that you feel is of the ego, and it is derived from feeling a stronger sense of self relative to the other person. Even if he or she is the president or the pope, you feel superior in that moment because you know more. Many people are addicted to gossiping partly for this reason. In addition, gossiping often carries an element of malicious criticism and judgment of others. And so it also strengthens the ego through the implied but imagined moral superiority that is there whenever you apply a negative judgment to anyone. If someone has more, knows more, or can do more than I, the ego feels threatened because the feeling of less diminishes its imagined sense of self relative to the other. It may then try to restore itself by somehow diminishing, criticizing, or belittling the value of the other person's possessions, knowledge, or abilities. Or the ego may shift its strategy, and instead of competing with the other person, it will enhance itself by association with that person if he or she is important in the eyes of others. Ego and fame. The well-known phenomenon of name-dropping, the casual mention of who you know, is part of the ego strategy of gaining a superior identity in the eyes of others and therefore in its own eyes, through association with someone important. The bane of being famous in this world is that who you are becomes totally obscured by a collective mental image. Most people you meet want to enhance their identity, the mental image of who they are, through association with you. They themselves may not know that they are not interested in you at all, but only in strengthening their ultimately fictitious sense of self. They believe that through you they can be more. They are looking to complete themselves through you, or rather through the mental image they have of you as a famous person, a larger-than-life collective conceptual identity. The absurd overvaluation of fame is just one of the many manifestations of egoic madness in our world. Some famous people fall into the same error and identify with the collective fiction, the image people and the media have created of them, and they begin to actually see themselves as superior to ordinary mortals. As a result, they become more and more alienated from themselves and others, more and more unhappy, more and more dependent on their continuing popularity. Surrounded only by people who feed their inflated self-image, they become incapable of genuine relationships. Albert Einstein, who was admired as almost superhuman and whose fate it was to become one of the most famous people on the planet, never identified with the image the collective mind had created of him. He remained humble, egoless. In fact, he spoke of a grotesque contradiction between what people consider to be my achievements and abilities and the reality of who I am and what I am capable of. This is why it is hard for a famous person to be in genuine relationship with others. A genuine relationship is one that is not dominated by the ego with its image-making and self-seeking. In a genuine relationship, there's an outward flow of open, alert attention towards the other person, in which there is no wanting whatsoever. That alert attention is presence. It is a prerequisite for any authentic relationship. The ego always either wants something, or if it believes there's nothing to get from the other, it is in a state of utter indifference. It doesn't care about you. And so, the three predominant states of egoic relationships are wanting, thwarted wanting, anger, resentment, blaming, complaining, and indifference.
Wanting, thwarted wanting, and indifference. You know, when I listened to this particular lecture the first time, it kind of kicked me in the stomach a little bit. Because, I mean, who doesn't want stuff? And wanting is something that's tied, again, to our survival instinct and to our instinct to perpetuate the species and to improve situations for ourselves and for our families. And those are valid things. You know, you cannot say they aren't. Source did not make us here and to just lie down and not do anything. I want to talk a little bit about how other species handle the ego and how they handle the wanting and the thwarted wanting and the indifference. And maybe that'll give you a little idea of things to look for in yourself to see if they're operating there. I'll begin with a species that I was a member of many, many lifetimes ago. And this species had literally no needs or wants left. It lived in an environment that was entirely hospitable to it. It derived all of its nutrition from its environment without having to actively feed. It was literally the only thing that was left in the area in which it lived. There were no other forms of life in that area. There had been a long time previous to that. There had been another species there, and they warred. And it was a great and terrible war from their perspective. From our perspective, it probably was one ant colony going after another. But because they had no wants and no needs and no stimuli at all, They had turned inward. And they retold their great and glorious history over and over and over again. And in fact, they had become so inward turned that they reincarnated in loops that were almost immediate. When one member would pass away of old age, another member would be born, and the same soul, and complete with its memory, would be reincarnated in that new one. And it was the single most stifling environment ever. And they reacted to an outside influence with what can only be described as hatred and violence. And it was a very bizarre form of hatred and violence, in fact, because instead of violently attacking, instead they simply denied the outside entity basic human rights or its equivalent. This individual was not allowed to participate in the society at all, in any way. I mean, completely shunned. Completely shut down, and in the only way that remained for it to need the society outside of emotional interaction was also denied, so that the individual was tortured physically by its own physical body. And I won't go into the gory details of how that happened, but it was extremely nasty. That's one way of handling it. Their egos had gotten turned into infinitely recursive cycle. They could not break out of it in any way, and anything that came in to try to break them out of it was completely unacceptable to them. That is an example of where the ego of an entire civilization had become completely self-absorbed. There was no room for anything outside of themselves. There was no room for novelty, no room for growth. They were completely cut off. That's what ego, left unabated, will do. That's the extreme case. The Naga are probably on the opposite end of that spectrum. They probably have the least individually of any of the species I've run into. They essentially are a collective, not in the mindless sort of like a bee colony or an ant farm, but a collective nonetheless. The group always is the first thought in their minds, and the individual is the second. It's a very gentle culture as a result. They are gentle with each other, and they are gentle with outsiders. And when they see some of the ego stuff that other cultures do, they are astonished and aghast. And they don't know how to interpret it, and they don't know how to deal with it. I don't consider them ascended masters, even though apparently Source gave them some kind of special dispensation. But they are definitely something that if you have the opportunity to meet them and to study them, please take it. Even if they scare you to look at the first time you see them, take the opportunity to learn. These are some really fascinating folks. I didn't really get enough of the Pleiadian experience to give a good assessment of their ego other than to say that they have them and they don't. They're not skilled egoists, but it's still in there. They don't know how to handle it sometimes when it surfaces. And that's the best I can say on that. I don't think they're a real problem with it, but I could be wrong. I think ignorance of self, whenever you have ignorance of self, is a problem. And I think they have a problem with ignorance of self because they think there's something and they haven't thrown that off yet. They think they're independent of ego and they haven't gotten there. They've managed to find a workaround that works most of the time. The thing that I learned from them, that telepathy and the ability to sustain a telepathic relationship with another entity is directly coupled to how well you can control your ego. And whether or not you leak information telepathically is also controlled, is determined by how you controlled your ego. Because the ego is derived in at least half proportion from the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind is the thing that's going to tell on you. It's going to make you make the Freudian slip. It's going to make you reveal yourself through your word choices. And telepathy comes directly from that. Derives its basis from that point that's balanced directly between the conscious and subconscious minds. It's exactly on that razor's edge. So is the ego. So these two things, and as Kuz had mentioned earlier in the chat, will is also at that point. So these three things are associated. And I learned that from watching what was going on and the dynamic amongst the Pleiadians. Let me tell you who else has a big thing going on and a part of. It's the Anunnaki. Now, they're the poster children for what not to do with an ego. They really are. Now, from what I understand, there is a possibility that there are some Anunnaki out there that did not fall into that ego trap. There is that possibility. I don't know. I have not had that encounter, but I have heard a rumor. And if that's true, then they must be very concerned about what that particular portion of their civilization is doing, because they're hurting themselves bad. And we, because we learned how to do the ego thing from the Anunnaki, are hurting ourselves with it very badly. So the Anunnaki have a native ability with telepathy. That native ability diminished when the ego thing kicked in. It diminished because the ego was sitting there busy judging and complaining about being thwarted and, you know, all the negativity that comes from that. And you can't be in telepathic contact with another being if you're sitting there thinking bad thoughts about them. How many times have you thought something ugly about somebody and then gone, oh, thank God they can't read my mind. I just thought the most uncharitable thought in the world. Exactly that. That's what they're going to hear if you're in telepathic contact. They're going to know what you think of them. And if you think their dress is ugly or their butt looks big in it, they're going to know that. If you think that you're, you know, going to put something over on somebody because you're smarter than they are, they're going to know that too. If you become a telepathic adept where you can hide that, maybe you'll get by with it for a while. But eventually your subconscious is going to trip you up and you'll leak a little bit. There are two kinds of Anunnaki amongst the ones that I've been dealing with. There's ones that continue to keep up that subterfuge and continue to have the ego barrier on their telepathy. And they rely heavily on mechanical telepathy, a mechanical electronic device that amplifies their telepathic ability and is focused specifically on only certain portions of the brain. The ones that they know that they can control the inputs to those areas. But if you're a good enough telepathic adept, you can read right through that and see what they're really thinking. It's like a whisper when they're shouting, but you can get it. It'll leak a little. And then there's the other group, and that's the Anunnaki advisors and Ea, are the ones that are like this. They know they're imperfect. They accept the fact they're imperfect. And they're a good model for us, by the way. And they just, I'd been talking about this the other day to someone, and I said, you know, they realize that it's inevitable if you're in telepathic with somebody that you're going to end up in a situation where you catch someone on the pot. And you're going to realize you've done that, and you're going to get the graphic details. And that might not be something that most of us could deal with because we're not schooled in it yet. But they just pretend like it didn't happen. They pretend like they don't receive those inputs, even if they do. Or they may catch you thinking a thought that you wouldn't normally share because your guard's down. And humans are going to be doing that a lot, let me tell you. It takes a lot of years to get where you can shut those things down. And you know what thoughts you're transmitting and which ones you're not. But they don't care. They don't react. Because, you know, something, the one thing that you are in control of is your reaction. The ego doesn't like that. The ego wants to be the one to stamp its feet and have the tantrum. The ego wants to be the one that gets its way, no matter what. It can't just let things be. It can't just accept things as being natural. It has to sit there and giggle. I think giggling is one of the least understood phenomena in human beings. It's a known fact that humor, comedians, anybody that studies comedy as a psychological, and believe me, professional comedians do this. They realize that the reason people laugh is because they're recognizing something that they about themselves that they don't want anyone else to know, or a tendency within them, even if it hasn't actually happened to them. It's relief. The source of it is relief. The relief comes from either nobody noticed it, or somebody got away with it, or it didn't actually happen, it was a near miss, and they giggle. That's the ego recognizing that it got away with something that maybe it shouldn't have got away with. Think about that for a while. Think about the relationship between ego and humor. It's a fascinating one. Now, why am I on about telepathy when this is a show about ego? I'm on about telepathy because that's what I think is coming next. And that's why getting past our ego barriers is so critical right now. That's why it's on our path as we travel towards what some people refer to as ascension. We are reaching a point as a species where telepathy is going to be more important. And what we think we manifest ego is distinct with either of those things and may even be dangerous to us if we begin to mess either of those abilities. You wouldn't put a handgun in the hands of a small child because you know the child is curious and is going to be poking and prodding on things. Just by its very nature, and does not understand the concept of aiming, and does not understand the destructive potential of that handgun. We are at the point where, as a species, we are about to develop some very significant mental abilities. We would call it magic. That's how powerful some of these abilities are. And we don't have the thinking tools and the personal control systems, the sovereign control systems of self-control, as opposed to enforced control. We don't have those in place yet. That will be more dangerous than nuclear weapons. If you can think at someone, and because you are caught up in a knot of hatred, if you can look at someone and cause them to melt, boy, I'll tell you, there's going to be a lot of melted people. If you can look at someone and cause them, you know, discomfort because you're jealous of them, there's going to be a lot of that going on right now. We have to redefine the relationships that we have with each other. And put them on a basis of truth and a basis of recognizing each individual as a sovereign being and acting in a Well, Skype dropped my call. I'm hoping that you can hear me now. I've only got 4 minutes left ahead and finish up very quickly. And just, I'm going to continue this on the next show because this is so important. But I'm going to say really quickly before I go, we'll be stopped developing our telepathic abilities and our gifts that are supposed to be our birthright if we do not have the tools necessary to use them safely. So please, if you're interested and you want to continue on this process of ascension and gain what we have earned and what is our right to have, please, please pay attention to how to manage your ego and how to behave in a sovereign manner with one another in regards to it. I'm going to go ahead and close the show out at this point. This one is Adam Castillo, 160 years, refers to the length of time of the orbit of Neptune.